On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we react to the disappointing news that Tarek Skubal needs arthroscopic elbow surgery. What does that mean for him? What does that mean for the Tigers? Who's going to pitch for the Tigers moving forward? Framber Valdez is one of those answers, but he had a tough Tuesday night in many respects. We also react to Shohei Ohtani's latest start on the mound. We talk about Carlos Correa having another injury. Oh boy, the Astros are having a tough go of it right now when it comes to the injured list. And finally, we take a look ahead at the awards races, all three major awards races. Who is going to claim the MVP, Cy Young, and Rookie of the Year by the end of the season? We'll do our best to project that. All that and more on this episode of Baseball Barbacast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world with enough loose bodies to start a dance troupe. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. Feeling limber?
Honestly, now you just got me thinking about the Jabberwockies. For something, some combination of those words has led me to reminiscing about the Jabberwockies, which, I don't know, do you think they ever referred to themselves as loose bodies?
Does Tarek Skubal know what the Jabberwockies are? That is our opener. The arm is a clock. Not actually, of course, but in a way, it is very true. Pitchers in this day and age, it is just a matter of time before a boo-boo, an ailment, an issue comes up, rears its ugly head, and renders a hurler useless for the time being. And it happened to the best pitcher in the world this week. Is Tarek Skubal was diagnosed with loose bodies. A hilarious sentence, but a very important one, as this injury very well may shape the remainder of this season for the Detroit Tigers and the offseason to come for the back-to-back Cy Young Award winner.
And maybe that's a good place to start, which is that Tarek Skubal is not going to win his third consecutive Cy Young, as he was going to try and become just the third pitcher ever to win three straight, joining Randy Johnson and Greg Maddux. Instead, this injury is going to keep him out for an indefinite period of time. Now, it is important to, I think, let's go through the timeline of how we got this news and then where we think we go from here. The first thing I will also just mention off the top here, because we don't know exactly when this will be coming out today, Tarek Skubal is slated to undergo this arthroscopic surgical procedure today on Wednesday, at which point we may get a little bit more clarity regarding how long he's going to be out. With the information that we have now, which we can lead up to and build up to how we got there earlier this week, we do believe, and by all accounts, Tarek Skubal believes he will pitch again this season. So this is not the season-ending elbow surgery. We are not going to see Tarek Skubal again this season. From what we know right now, he expects to pitch again this year, but there is still some uncertainty about when exactly that could happen. So let's talk about how we got to that information to begin with.
It's also worth noting that just because Tarek Skubal believes something does not mean that it will be true, right? He can want to pitch again this season all he wants, but the medical realities are the medical realities. Now, Skubal has had an interesting injury timeline over his career, and I actually think that is where we should start. Gets Tommy John surgery while he's in college at Seattle University, misses an entire season there, comes back as a redshirt junior in 2018, gets drafted in the ninth round, has flexor tendon surgery in 2022 once he's up in the big leagues with the Tigers. Flexor tendon surgery, which I should note, is part of the general elbow, right? It is elbow forearm area. When you're thinking about pitcher injuries, I like to think about them really in three and a half categories. You have fingers, which is the half. You have elbow forearm, which is one. You have shoulder, and then you have everything else. And I think that the worst injury you can have is shoulder, then elbow, then finger, then the rest of your body, vaguely speaking. And so because all of these have been elbow related, it is slightly less concerning than if it was shoulder. So I think that is just important to explain. Now, he comes back from flexor tendon surgery in June of 2023, and since that date has been the best pitcher on the planet, full stop, no questions asked.
Yeah, and that's because he had been in the big leagues for a little bit. We had seen him show some promise. He had become this really interesting prospect.
This Derek? Tariq? You know, people were probably
still,
this is the Tariq. It ain't Tariq. But this was the Tariq Skubal era in some regards.
Yes, yes. I believe he debuts in 2020, if I'm not mistaken. But after he came back from that second elbow surgery is really when he was special. So while sure, the fact that it is not shoulder, the fact that we are now on the third elbow slash forearm injury is concerning, but also I think informs Tarek Skubal's mindset, and we'll get to some of his quotes here in a little bit,
yeah,
which is that from his perspective, he could say, well, and I think he basically had this quote where he's like, the last time, a couple times I came back, I look pretty good. I trust that I'm going to be myself because I've overcome these to become what I am today. And so he's viewing this as just another obstacle for him to then pitch his way back into being the best pitcher in the world. That said, the medical is the medical, and continuing to get elbow procedures cannot be perceived as a positive. I'm sorry. Like, there's no way around
sure,
that.
Of course.
And at the very least, we know it is taking him out for the present, which is as important as it is. So anyway, Tarek Skubal, he pitches against Great Britain in the WBC. And then he's like, oh, no, I want to come back. No, I can't. I'm not going to. I got to do the right thing. So he doesn't pitch again in the WBC. But he starts the season with the Tigers. And so far this year, he's been very good. It's not like you've watched him and been like, something's off, but the velocity had been a tick down, just a little bit below. It had been performing a little bit different than normal, his fastball. So it wasn't, there were not red flags because his stats were still pretty good, but it was a little bit like, okay. And then in his most recent start in Atlanta, towards the end of the outing, he throws a pitch and then is kind of shaking the arm. And that is when, you know, we've unfortunately become very used to this situation where that's where we all start to freak out. However, that was not the last pitch he threw, because then he then just throws a 98 right like the next pitch and then finishes his outing.
Yeah, I was watching this game live cooking dinner and like had to stop chopping mid onion. It was like, Trainer out to the mound. It's like, oh. Throws a fastball by Matt Olson, which not a lot of people are doing these days, because he might be the best hitter on the planet. Throws a fastball by Matt Olson, he starts kind of shaking his left arm out, takes his glove off of his other hand, his right hand, starts massaging kind of the top of his forearm, calls out Dylan Dingler, the catcher. Anytime that happens, the manager and the trainer run out of the dugout. They talk to him. He kind of shakes it out, feels it out, says, I'm good, waves them away. Throws 97 by Matt Olson again, strikes him out, doesn't just finish the batter, then finishes the inning, striking out two more hitters. This was the seventh inning of a game, one that the Tigers eventually lost on a walk-off to the Braves, but one in which Skubal was generally very good. So at the time, it doesn't seem like that big of a deal, and all of their quotes after the fact were more like A.J. Hinch, the manager, going, oh, you know, never fun to go out there, glad it wasn't a bigger deal, and Tarek Skubal being like, yeah, you know, I just feel a little bit something, but clearly, as you can see by how I pitched, like, worked through it. Everything's okay. No obvious issues in the intervening days. The day before Tarek Skubal's next start, which was supposed to be Monday, so during the game on Sunday, he feels it. I believe this is a quote from Hinch, locking up, when his elbow starts locking up, which is not a thing your elbow should do if it's going to make you $400 million one day. They get scans. The scans reveal the loose bodies. They're loose. And the plan is surgery. And that's where we are. My brother-in-law actually had the surgery, Jordan. Not a pitcher.
Oh.
And so he would just go around our house waving his arms around, screaming loose bodies, like shaking his hips and like being all like, you know, the feeling loose. And so as soon as I saw this news, I called my wife and I was like, hey, we got loose bodies.
This is also the second prominent case of loose bodies with Edwin Diaz also undergoing surgery for the same thing earlier this season.
That is true. There have actually been a number, an uptick even, in loose bodies this season. I think it is worth discerning between loose bodies and bone chips. My understanding as a not medical expert, let me be very clear, we got to even have the lawyer say that, Jake Mintz, not a medical expert. The difference between bone chips and loose bodies is that bone chips are a type of loose body. So when you have loose bodies, there are various particles, items, entities, things floating around in your elbow. One of those things can be bone chips, right? It's like the difference between a lemon and citrus, even. There are other things that could be in there, like cartilage or various, you know, whatever in our body that's not supposed to be there. That's what a loose body is. Bone chips are a part of that. And so as far as bone chips are concerned, we have Hunter Green on the shelf right now of the Reds with bone chips. Spencer Schwellenbach has bone chips. Hudson Waldrop has, Hurston Waldrop, excuse me, has bone chips with the Braves. Carlos Rodon, friend of the program, got surgery. Sometimes they'll call it a cleanup. Oh, I got an elbow cleanup, a debridement, right? That is all kind of code for this same general thing. And the reason that this is relevant is to know when Tarek Skubal might be back. The best way to determine that is to look at past similar surgeries and how long it took pitchers to come back from this. And the other important point about that is this surgery is something that you can pitch through and guys do often pitch through. And so what ends up happening is this is a surgery you get at the end of a season into the off season, which is what Carlos Rodon did. This is what Francisco Lindor did. This is the surgery that kept him out of the WBC, very famously. Yvonne Herrera of the Cardinals got the surgery towards the end of last season. Other pitchers, Sonny Gray once got the surgery at the end of a season, was kind of throwing back by the beginning of the next season. But generally, this can take as short as like 55-ish days. Blake Snell came back that quickly, but can also take up to, you know, 95 days or more, which is what happened a couple years ago with Danny Coulomb, reliever, when he was on the Orioles. And so as far as the timeline goes, when A.J. Hinch and Tarek Skubal are like, we don't know, the answer, that's the end. Like, they don't know, right? It could be shorter, it could be longer.
Yeah, and maybe we get some clarity on that after Skubal undergoes surgery today. I expect it to keep it pretty vague. They have no reason to be overly transparent about setting expectations for when you will see him again, as much as I'm sure Tarek Skubal is going to talk a big game about how he expects to be back and expects to impact the Tigers and all these things. And I don't blame him for saying those things, but I think we know at the very least, even though this is, as you mentioned, arthroscopic surgery, which is different than reconstructive or anything more dramatic, that is definitely going to take him out for the season. I don't know. It's so funny when they're referring to it as, oh, it's relatively routine, which I think even Hinch was like, yeah, it's a quote. I think it's a relatively simple procedure if you can call any type of surgical intervention simple. But any sort of referring to it as a cleanup, it just always makes me laugh, you know.
As if you're picking laundry up off your bedroom floor.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's what it is. It's, you know, clean up, clean up, everybody,
every elbow.
Yeah.
Every elbow, everywhere, clean up.
That's what this is. So, okay, so now there's two paths we can go down for this conversation. The first, we have to just talk about Tarek Skubal on his own, regardless of the Tigers' place in the standings and how he helps them, is his own story. So, but also
bigger than the team,
the Tigers.
He's bigger than the rest of his team.
Yes,
in a way.
So let's start with him. Let's do him
stature,
first,
his fame.
Then,
yeah.
Let's do him first because that will lead us to what happened last night in Detroit and where the Tigers go from here. Who else is going to pitch or maybe not pitch because they're about to be suspended? But let's close the book on Skubal and talk about what is next for him. What are reasonable expectations? And also, now we were already going to spend the whole season thinking about, okay, can he win this third straight Cy Young? What would that mean for him in free agency? Would that meaningfully change his chances of getting this gigantic historic contract. This is already coming after an offseason where we spent the whole offseason talking about him, even when he wasn't a free agent yet, because he had this historic arbitration case that he won. And so he's making, you know, $30 million this year, which is way more than anyone has ever made in his situation. Now he will not be pitching for most of this season. But if we assume he is going to come back in some form, there are a lot of different ways this can go in terms of what position Scooble is going to be when he does reach the open market, assuming he does, and assuming this doesn't invite the possibility of the Tigers being like, hey, this would be a good time to sign an extension, wouldn't it? After your third elbow surgery, which maybe I would assume that the Tigers would maybe be a little more patient in that regard. But let's just think about Scooble's free agency, what that could mean, how you think this changes it, and the different paths we could go from here.
Let's talk about the money, because that is unfortunately the big story of this, is that this is what, a $200 million potential swing? Potential?
I mean,
you open it up and things are bad. If Tarek Skubal doesn't throw another pitch this season, I mean, he's going to lose over $100 million in the open market, right? Now, Noah's crying for him. He is making $32 million or whatever in ARB right now. That's not the end of the world, but it is relevant as we, you know, cover and discuss this game. He was on track and may still be on track to break the all-time record for the largest contract ever given out to a free agent pitcher. Okay. Biggest free agent contract ever for a pitcher. That contract was the Yoshinobu Yamamoto deal a couple of off seasons ago, which was 12 years, $325 million. The indication was that Skubal was going to do his best with super agent Scott Boras by his side to surpass that figure, okay? Now, Yamamoto's situation was a little different because he was younger, and so there were more years, so the number might be bigger, whatever. Skubal was going to break some sort of record this winter. That may still be the case. But what happens now this season is going to have a huge impact on what he makes, because if he comes back, if this is 2 to 3 months, let's say it's 2 months, right? 2 months, he's back on August 1. Is that 2 months away? July 1, mid-July, right after the All-Star break. And he's incredible down the stretch. People are going to treat Tarek Skubal as if he was always Tarek Skubal. If he shows that he's back from this. Maybe with a small demerit as you shake your head. But I think for the most part, if he comes back and shoves and they're in the playoffs and he looks like Tarek Skubal, it's not as if he had a clean bill of health his whole career anyway. Those were always going to be concerns. Now, that's a scale between that outcome and him not pitching at all. The worst case scenario is they open it up and they're like, oh, you actually need a longer procedure. We need to do ligament repair. This is going to be beyond 6 months, right? And so as far as it's concerned for him, it's a real bummer. Now, last point I want to make on Skubal, and this is going back to the WBC stuff, okay? We don't know. We don't know. We can be careful. We know what's bad for elbows and for arms. We know what helps to break them, which is overuse. We don't know if Tarek Skubal pitching in that game against Great Britain contributed to this. We don't know if him not pitching a second time in the WBC saved him from a bigger injury. We don't know. Okay? It's all speculation. It is the single largest mystery in our sport. It is the unsolvable mountain that whichever team figures it out will just start winning World Series by the dozen. And I think that it's like when we try and evaluate, like, oh, is this safe? Is that safe? I opt out of that because I feel so helpless and I'm not smart enough to like solve these problems. And so for me, it's like, whatever, let the guy pitch. Just let him pitch. Get every last bullet out of every guy you can when they're good. Now, don't be reckless, but understand that every arm's clock is ticking all the time, right? So
yeah,
that's just a big picture thought I had.
Yeah, and I know people have pointed to certain pitchers' performance who were in the WBC, and I mean, it felt like we got through the tournament without anybody getting injured, but there could be lingering effects. I don't really want to point towards that in Skubal's case or other pitchers' case for any reason, because I agree it's interesting, but I also think your larger point is the most important one. So I will leave it at that. My last thought on Scooble as far as free agency goes, I think what I'm most curious about, you laid out the two ends of the spectrum. There are so many outcomes in between that where he does come back and he's pretty good, but maybe the Tigers miss the postseason so he doesn't get a chance to showcase in October again and leave that lingering memory in owners and front offices' mind of, oh my God, we need to give this guy all the money. But I am also thinking owners. About it from his own perspective.
Owners. Yeah. We should talk about owners here. When you're swimming in this pool, when you're eating at this restaurant, owners get involved. When the numbers get this high on a salary, this is not just the GM being like, oh, yeah. We'll do.
For sure.
Tarek Skubal, or his agent, is not just convincing the GM that Tarek Skubal is worth it. It's convincing the owner. And I will be very interested to see how, like, your point about the playoffs is so important there. Because if he comes back and he's, like, throws a complete game shutout in the playoffs in his fifth start back from injury, owners are going to be like, I want that guy on my baseball team. And that will move the needle.
And they might anyway. And I think that's why there are so many different ways it can go from here. And also, this is a good time to transition back to the Tigers. But I also want to just mention it from the standpoint of Skubal in particular. His perspective, Scott Boras's perspective, does this injury in the world where he comes back and it's like not great, but he is pitching and the Tigers miss the playoffs and then Skubal, who does seem to have some amount of loyalty and passion for Detroit, feel more of a personal loyalty and say, you know what? Unfinished business. Hey, Tigers, let's work something out. Even if it's a shorter term, 3 years, $150 million or whatever, something like that's that works better for both teams. Both sides. I don't know, because it's possible that Scott Boras is going to decide, and Tarek Skubal could decide, I'm going for history no matter what.
Yeah,
that's possible. I'm curious how his own priorities change after a third elbow surgery and depending on how the rest of the Tigers season goes from here. And then let's also just mention, hey, probably going to be a lockout, in which case this whole timeline of negotiation and when he is going to be able to make these decisions, is he going to want to do that before December 1st? Is he willing to just wait it out and do it on March 20th? That is a whole other thing we will continue to speculate on for all a bunch of free agents, but Skubal is now part of that conversation as well.
I think this injury makes it more likely it's after the lockout, because it's just another complexity thrown into what is already going to be one of the most complex negotiations that really we've ever seen. So that is the Skubal side of things. Let's pivot to the Detroit Tigers, who are not having fun. Thank God for the good people of the Motor City that the Pistons are rolling, winning game one last night on their way to what looks to be the Eastern Conference Finals in the National Basketball Association. Because the Tigers are not in a good place. This past offseason was a key one for Detroit, with the assumption that this might be the last year they have Tarek Skubal. Skubal is an aircraft carrier. When he's on your team, you can win the World Series. He is one of the players that allows you to win the World Series. He's that good. So they went out, and instead of improving their offense, they improved their pitching staff, signing Framber Valdez to an enormous contract. Since this moment, they have been inundated with a flurry, a bevy of pitching injuries. Okay? On the shelf right now, besides Skubal, Casey Mize, all-star last year, has a strained groin. Reese Olson out for the year with shoulder surgery. Troy Milton has an elbow strain. He's on his way back. Justin Verlander has a hip issue. Jackson Jobe out, recovering from Tommy John. They knew he was going to be out, but still a relevant character. That leaves this rotation very undermanned. Framber Valdez, Jack Flaherty, Cater Montero, and they just called back up Ty Madden. That's four starters. Usually need five. Not the Tigers, though, because they have embraced bullpen chaos over the years. But for a team that was, for brief snippets of the early going, looking like the second best team in the American League behind the Yankees, potentially, they can no longer be considered as such.
Yeah, and Framber Valdez, we are about to get to what happened last night. But before we dive into that stuff, I think, Yeah, they can lean on the fact. The good news is that the AL Central seems to be back on its BS, as the entire division is under 500. The Tigers and Guardians tied for first place at 18 and 19. The Tigers still have the third best run differential in the American League at plus 10, behind the Yankees, who are at plus 79, and the Rays, who are at plus 12. So the American League is still, besides the Yankees, there to be had to a degree, certainly their division. But this pitching now, which looked to be after the offseason that they had, could be a super-duper strength, is now a very clear weakness. And it is not just the fact that their entire rotation is injured. It is the fact that their bullpen has been very bad. I know that the ERA right now still ranks 12th, but they've been blowing saves left and right. Kenley Jansen, another guy who they invested in, has not been awesome. Some of these guys have also been thrust into opener roles.
Yeah.
So, sure, the bullpen chaos, you can embrace that. That was not a strategy a couple years ago and then last year until much later on in the season. This should never be plan A in May or April. And so, and AJ Hinch will be the first person to tell you that, which should not be that. Now, okay, maybe Troy Mellon's coming back. That would be good. Maybe we get Verlander back, but he's very old and what do you know? So before last night, which we're now about to finally talk about, it was like, well, it's a good thing they signed Framber Valdez, because that dude is awesome. That dude posts. That dude is going to, you kind of know what you're getting there from a performance standpoint. And with all these other injuries and all this, especially with, oh God, Flaherty and some of these younger pitchers that you're maybe going to be counting on, at least you got Framber. Or so we thought. So, now that all can still be true. However, Framber Valdez is now going to have to overcome another ugly incident. After last year, his reputation was tarnished by his own questionable act.
Doing?
Crossing up his catcher and throwing maybe a pitch at his catcher on purpose. That is something we talked about a lot last year at the end of his tenure in Houston. It was ugly. It was weird. It was something we hadn't really seen before. And it seems like he overcame that, at least to a degree. He gets a large short term, but a pretty hefty contract from Detroit. And we haven't really talked about it much since he signed that contract, because we've been so focused on Scooble. And he has looked pretty much himself in the early going with the Tigers. However, last night, he had a very bad game. He looked terrible. The Red Sox were smacking him around the yard. And then after allowing back-to-back home runs, I believe, towards the end of his outing, he, including a 5-million-foot home run from Wilson Contreras, he decides to throw a baseball at Trevor Story. Was it intentional? Everybody who is listening to this podcast, who watched this, who it was involved, says yes. Framber Valdez, for the purposes of you know, us just saying what happened, has denied this and said, no, it was not intentional. However, this is one of the more obvious intentional hit-by-pitches we've ever seen. He was ejected because of it, and we expect him to get suspended some amount of games. I think the quote that is the simplest to really understand why this is as obviously intentional as it could possibly be comes from Tigers manager AJ Hinch. After he throws at Trevor Story and the bench is kind of clear and the Red Sox are like, what the hell? That was so obvious. You know, normal fracas after a situation like this. I think this quote from AJ Hinch really says it all. Quote, we play a really good brand of baseball here. That didn't feel like it. I'm not judging intent, but I know when you go out on the field in those confrontations, you usually feel like you are in your right. It didn't feel good being out there. So while Hinch does sneak in the, I'm not judging intent, I am not going to say that my own player was throwing at someone on purpose, he is pretty much coming all the way up to the line of admitting, I know that we were in the wrong, which baseball players and managers essentially never, will never admit ever.
Never. These people so will that is bend so reality
yes.
to yes. avoid responsibility publicly mm-hmm. and privately. And mm-hmm. it is so, so insightful and indicative that Hinch was willing to say this. Really, it's kind of stunning. And I think that if Framber can say, oh, it was an accident, that is not a gentleman who has earned the benefit of the doubt as far as these types of incidents are concerned, that the pitch that plunked Story was the first four-seam fastball he has thrown all season with a movement profile unlike anything he has thrown all season. It just screams on purpose. Like, let me put it this way. I was texting someone this. If I'm Framber Valdez and I wanted you to think I was throwing at you on purpose, I would have done almost exactly what he did.
Right. And so I think all of these combined, we've seen way less obvious hit by pitches get suspended. And yeah. I'm really curious to what degree this is going to be, because
sure.
And it's going to happen. And for a Tigers team right now, they cannot afford to lose anybody. I don't think he's going to get suspended 30 games, but I think he's going to get suspended long enough to miss at least one start. And that's just the last thing the Tigers need yeah. right now. We just laid it out. They are so injured, and they have the benefit of playing in this very bad American League, and maybe they're not going to fall in this huge hole without Skubal.
Yeah.
But it's just so disappointing. And especially you have to imagine from Hinch's perspective, this isn't a situation where, oh, we just signed this big free agent and I just met this guy. AJ Hinch and Framber Valdez go back a while, right? That's probably a big part of why they even wanted to give him all that money, is because AJ Hinch, I'm sure, believes in Framber Valdez, the pitcher and the person, and wanted him to be on their team. And so you have to imagine that that adds to an even higher level of why I'm sure Hinch is looking at the situation, who knows Framber, and is like, yeah, this is my guy. And unfortunately, he would probably do something like this. And that sucks. That's got to be a really crappy feeling for him, and a really disappointing moment for the Tigers amid an ugly week.
It's embarrassing, and it's selfish, and it's stupid, and it doesn't accomplish anything. There was once a time in our sport where if an opposing hitter cranked one off you and bat flipped it and watched it and embarrassed you, and you threw it the next guy, people on your team might respect you more for standing up for the, you know, warped version of the greater good, right? The game does not move that way anymore. It has changed for the better. And so there is nothing to come of this for Framber Valdez. There is only negatives. And that is why it is such an irrational decision. If you, I don't think you should throw at anybody at any time, whatever. If someone throws at your guy and then you throw at their guy, you can argue, like, that is a reasonable thing to do. There are, it makes some sense. This is just embarrassing, selfish, and he should be ashamed of himself. And if I'm on the Tigers, I'm so freaking steamed about it.
Yeah. And I will.
You're
going to
make me
now,
run out there. You're going to make me run out there. Like, I have to go defend you for you being an idiot.
As Hinch said, it probably did not feel good to be out there. The Red Sox. Now this will be my last point, and then we'll take a break. As silly as it is, maybe this is exactly what the Red Sox need. This is something where the Red Sox can look at what happened. They won these first two games going for the sweep
here,
and they can say, oh, for once, look over there. Look at the mess that's going on over there. We're having a good time. We're blowing out the Tigers
they
on the road.
They handed it off, Jordan.
Mood.
Jordan.
Oh,
Jordan,
man.
They were playing misery tag. Tag, you're bummed.
And so does this fix the Red Sox roster? No. However, I wouldn't be surprised if this is something where the Red Sox would be like, you know what? Maybe things aren't so bad over here. Maybe Chad Tracy is like, you know what? And by the way, the main caveat I want to say here, and this relates to the point you just made, I hope that they don't throw at someone today, because that would be so disappointing and stupid. And I don't think that they will. I don't think that they will. But you never rule out the stupidity of baseball players and teams.
Listen, kids.
So I hope that doesn't happen.
Kids.
Yeah.
Kids. Life lesson. If you have the moral high ground, keep it.
Yes. So, okay. Sonny Gray is pitching today against Jack
Not
Flaherty.
A guy who would do that.
Red Sox? I don't think so. Let's just focus on continuing to hit Jack Flaherty, which most teams have done this season. Go sweep the Tigers. You have a chance to do that. keeps some momentum. Yeah. You've now, you know, it's so, I always think it's so stupid when these events like galvanize a team. And I think this is so obvious. It's not like they got in this huge brawl and we stood up for each other. Like, no, this is just a situation where they can look at each other and be like, okay, we're on the same page here. That makes us feel decent after how the season has gone. And now let's maybe focus on
It's a little different than that. It's that the Red Sox, not on the record, not to reporters, whatever, the Red Sox to one another can laugh at someone else.
Exactly.
They can laugh at someone else. And as someone who has spent a lot of time already this season around teams that are struggling, okay, Mets, Phillies, Red Sox, you know, I can tell you that a lot of what keeps these people going, and maybe this is sad, is being like, man, that other team's a mess, aren't they? Like when I was with the, around the Mets, 100%. When I was around the Mets a couple of weeks ago, all the Mets people were like, man, Phillies look bad. And then all the Phillies people were like, man, Mets, they don't look good, huh? And I'm like, right, but this is how it goes. And so I think that if the Red Sox end up making the playoffs, we will get stories in October about how it was them just like laughing at the Tigers and that got them back to where they needed to be.
It would not shock me. So again, I don't want to overread it too much, but I certainly had that thought. Okay, let's take a break. When we return,
Jordan, you don't need to be faster than the Fromm.
Yeah.
You don't need to be faster than the Fromm Bear. You need to be faster than the slowest team running from the Fromm Bear. Let's take a break.
Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. We now shift our attention from Detroit, Michigan, and head on down to Houston, Texas, where the Los Angeles Dodgers and Houston Astros are in the middle of a very interesting series. And we are going to talk about Shohei Ohtani, believe it or not, who made another appearance on the mound, but not at the plate on Tuesday. And his outing on Tuesday against the Astros represented both signs of progress for his quest to finally win the Cy Young Award, and also some very strange speed bumps along the way as Christian Walker greeted him in the second inning with a titanic home run to the train tracks in left field at Daikin Park. That was followed up by a Braden Shumake Crawford box special in the third inning, which is the last person you would ever want to allow a home run to.
The delta in aesthetics between these two Shohei Ohtani home runs allowed was unbelievable. The Christian Walker home run is as, like, if you wanted to show someone a pretty home run, like a beautiful swing leading to a no-doubter that scrapes the stars and tickles the moon and fills the soul, like it's this Christian Walker home run off of Ohtani. And then if you wanted to show a baseball novice, like, hey, do you know what a cheapie looks like? It's this Braden Shumake one. And they were just right around one another. But they count all the same.
Yeah, they sure do. And yet, other than those two very different home runs, dude was pretty good. He goes seven innings for the first time all season after throwing exactly six in his first five starts. The velocity was there. The sweeper was obviously quite good. But for the fourth time in his last five outings, the Dodgers lose as their offense continues to be kind of blah, as they do this sometimes. And Ohtani was not a part of the offense last night. Not that he has been particularly helpful in that regard when he has been hitting, which has certainly been a point of contention. Ohtani asked once again last night, hey, so is your pitching affecting your hitting? And he's like, I don't think so, but I also understand that I am not doing as great as I normally am. As far as him trying to be the best pitcher he can be, it is hard to deny that he is essentially doing that. He has the lowest whip in baseball of any starting pitcher. His strikeout to walk rate is terrific. His stuff looks amazing. He's going deeper into starts. And even though he finally allowed a couple home runs, it's hard to really complain about what he has looked like on the mound. However, when you are this two-way sensation, we have to focus on both sides. And that includes the fact that he is not hitting very well right now. And neither are the Dodgers in general.
like he could end up being a value on a value basis, like more valuable than last year. If he is like an 850 OPS guy who wins the Cy Young, right? Like this could be in the aggregate, the best version of Shohei Ohtani that we've ever seen. Right. And yet it feels as if we are being robbed of something. And I've kind of struggled to wrangle with this, where Ohtani has always operated either without limits or injured, where it's like the only thing that could physically stop him was something wrong, like actually an issue, an ailment of some sort. And this is really the first time where he is being restricted as a choice, as a strategy, at least in his major league career. And that is remarkable that we have gotten this far and it has been this long with him being this person. And yet it is a sign that not all things last forever, right? If you want Shohei Ohtani to be the best version of himself that he can be, well, then it makes sense at this point in his career to kind of put some guardrails on. And so far, those guardrails have absolutely worked. What I'm most interested in is how this manifests moving forward. Because in October, which is the real season for the Dodgers, remember, everything else is just prologue and preamble and practice. In October, Ohtani will hit when he pitches. You think, right?
I think so. I think that will be true. But yeah, I maybe it's not. Hard to imagine them not having him in the lineup in October. Yes, I agree with that.
It's like, oh, we're gonna play a very meaningful baseball game, and Shohei Ohtani's not gonna hit. Like, I'll believe that when I see it, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'll believe it when I see it. Okay, so then let's assume he's going to do both at the same time. If it makes sense right now for him to rest when he's pitching, which is the funny sentence, but at some point they will have to work him back in, right? Because you're not going to just have him show up in October and do something he hasn't done for a couple months. So I'm interested to see like how often and when and at what pace they choose to have him do both at the same time again.
Yeah. I'm really not that concerned about him as a hitter, even if he isn't doing both on the same days. I think he will heat back up, and I think he will be awesome. And I think that will happen. We've even seen like a brief little cold stretch, and then he has like a huge week, and then now he's gone back down. So he does seem to be struggling to some degree with balancing it, but it's, as my first point, I'll stand by that. You're getting exactly what you could possibly want from him on the mound. And that is, I know they've managed to lose a bunch of these starts, but if the goal, and for his personal goal, is to at least be as good as he possibly can be on the mound, and we are thinking about the regular season as a different task than the postseason, it's hard to say that things are really going that poorly, to be honest. He looks amazing on the mound.
If you're cutting out desserts and sweets and treats so that you can get ripped, and then you get ripped and you're like, man, all those desserts, how about those desserts? Like, you're doing this thing for a reason. You're keeping Ohtani out so that he, of the lineup when he's pitching, so that he can be the best pitcher in the world. And guess what? He's been the best pitcher in the world.
Yeah. And we're going to get to more Ohtani when we do some awards chat later. I do want to pivot to the Astros, but the last thing I'll just say about this is it's the same. I think I made this point when we started thinking about how he's approaching the season. As a spectator, I am approaching this the way that we did in 24, where it's like, okay, he's trying to be the best version of himself as a hitter. He's going for 50-50. Let's see him do that. This season, it appears that he is trying to focus on being the best version of himself as a pitcher. So that is what I'm going to focus on as well. That does not excuse it if he suddenly goes 0 for 35 and his OPS drops to 700 and whatever. That we can talk about that if that happens. But as long as he's just still a really good hitter, I'm going to stay focused on the fact that he looks like one of the best pitchers in the world. So that is my Ohtani outlook. And whether that means that is good enough for him to win the MVP, we'll talk about that later. But let's get to some Astros news here before we take another break. That is, first of all, a really nice win for them in that game last night. I mentioned Spencer Arrighetti, someone who we have seen with them, has looked like a really solid pitcher at a time where they do not have very many solid pitchers. They have been the worst pitching staff in baseball by every measure. Some of that is bad luck. Some of that is terrible performance and not throwing strikes. Peter Lambert, which, so I'm not going to go through the whole Peter Lambert career trajectory, but this is the kind of pitcher that we, I think, thought, yeah, the Astros could still do this. They could find these guys and turn them into competent starters. And he has looked, it's been different. This is not like a Jason Alexander where it's like, how's he getting away with this? He has good stuff. He's getting whiffs. He's getting strikeouts. He's going deep into games. He's, having good hitters look bad. So Peter Lambert looks like really something that they found there. As you, I'm sure, remember, we saw him in 10 years ago in A-ball, and he looked like a 13-year-old pitching. Now he has facial hair and is not that much younger than us. So,
but he looked like a 13-year-old, but he had polish. You know, he had polish, he had poise. And we were like, that's a big leaguer. And we were right. Never wrong, just early, baby.
So Peter Lambert, that's an encouraging development. What is not an encouraging development is the fact that another Astro appears to be seriously injured, and that is Mr. Carlos Correa, who, according to Chandler Room of The Athletic, suffered what is believed to be a significant left ankle injury during batting practice. Now, how exactly that happens is not clear. He was scratched hours before Tuesday's game. He is going to go visit a specialist and figure out how severe this injury is. It is worth noting, if you hear this headline or see this headline and be like, Carlos Correa, ankle? Wait a minute. Wasn't this the guy who had multiple contracts voided and messed up because of his ankle? Yeah, that was his other ankle.
Other ankle.
He had a surgically repaired right ankle very early in his career that became the
He's about to have a surgically repaired left ankle too.
Well, you know what? Hey, here's some solace from that. Yordan Alvarez, both knees have also been surgically repaired, and he's doing just fine. However, Carlos Correa is under contract for a lot of money, way more money than Yordan Alvarez, and is expected to be playing a lot of defense, including, more recently, shortstop, which, if you recall, he was hoping to not be playing once he got traded back to the Astros because Jeremy Peña is around. However, with Jeremy Peña injured, Carlos Correa has been playing more shortstop recently. The good news for Houston is that because they never traded from their logjam, that they have Isak Paredes to play third base, and Jeremy Peña is going to be back from his injury soon. The bad news is that I can't believe they now have another important player injured, and they are already so far back in the standings with this pitching staff that is ravaged and still not performing well. And Correa had generally been playing pretty well this season, and now you're losing him from the lineup for probably a significant amount of time. And this is just, it's just not happening for these Astros. I don't know. And we could get back to Christian Walker in a second, but as for Correa, brutal.
This is the baseball gods maybe giving the Astros a little long-term comeuppance. Yiner Diaz, Jeremy Peña, Joey Loperfido, Jake Myers, Taylor Trammell, Ronel Blanco, Hunter Brown, who finished third in the Cy Young, Tetsuya Imai, Christian Javier, Brandon Walter, Hayden Wesneski, Josh Hader, Nate Pearson. That's the IL. It's the Houston Astros IL.
I know
a lot of people.
I know you were just reading off the Fairgrass page, but it was so funny the order of those names that you read, because we were going back and forth between like AAA guys and Josh Hader. But a lot of guys are hurt for the Astros, and now they have another Correa who is owed. Remember, they essentially took on the whole contract. So $32 million, $32 million, $32 million for the next few years, and then a bunch of vesting options, which I don't know what's going to happen with those. It's bad, folks. But if we are going to give the Astros fans listening to this podcast any amount of comfort, let's end this segment on a positive note. And that is that Christian Walker has been amazing. And early in his Astros tenure, we were looking at it and we said, oh my God, they gave another person the exact Jose Abreu contract and he's playing like Jose Abreu. That was completely unfair. And now Christian Walker has been one of the best hitters in baseball and honestly has been pretty good since the last 2 months of last season. And I am the main point I want to make about him, when you listen to Christian Walker talk about hitting and you hear him explain his process, it does not surprise me that he is really gelling with their new hitting infrastructure. That I encourage people to go read what Chandler Rome wrote about them. I, of course, had some quotes from Dan Hennigan, who's one of their really important director of hitting offensive coordinator people. I had some quotes from him in my Yordan Alvarez story. It would not shock me at all if Christian Walker, with their new hitting coaches, Anthony Iapoche and Victor Rodriguez and Dan Hennigan, that they're vibing and he is feeling it. Because Christian Walker was too good for too long and was not that old to where we all liked that signing when they made it, even knowing the Jose Abreu history.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's been so important for them and is going to continue to be so if they're going to stay relevant in the postseason race.
You and I talked to a lot of people behind the scenes in terms of just like coaches and staff and development. Dan Hennigan is as impressive and as good of a communicator as anybody I've really ever interacted with. He is a man that knows what he is doing. And I am not shocked that the Astros are seeing the benefits of his offensive philosophies. Now, will it matter if the pitching is this hurt? Maybe not. But if you're looking at the ways in which a new voice and perspective can legitimately move the needle for a team, Hennigan is an example of that. Because we do hear this jargon a lot, like, oh, we hire this new guy, he's bringing new ideas. And it's just like, okay, like, whatever, like, nothing changes. Hennigan is I've been very, very impressed with that guy.
Well said, well said. All right, we're going to take a break. When we return, an early look at the three major awards races. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Baseball Barbercast. Before we get out of here, let's give out some awards. Now, doing awards on May 6th is silly. We understand that. And so the way that we would like to contextualize this exercise, who's in the mix, right? Who could win the award based upon what they have accomplished so far this season? Jordan and I often struggle when thinking about awards in the middle of the season to differentiate between this is the player who would win if a meteor hit the world today, or this is the player that I think will win, understanding that the rest of the season is going to transpire. The best example of this is just AL Cy Young, which we'll get to, Cam Schlutter, Max Fried. But let's begin at the top with American League MVP. Jordan, who is your AL MVP?
Yeah, so this week at Yahoo, I'm taking a look at all these races, and I you can already read the MVP piece. And with the MVP for both of them, it's like, okay, is someone going to dethrone Judge, dethrone Ohtani, who are going, both of them going for three-peats?
Right.
Judge has not really done anything wrong, and so he is still a correct answer. However, he does not have the highest OPS on his team. That belongs to Ben Rice, who has been otherworldly, and you can talk about him.
That's my pick.
But before you talk about Ben Rice, I'm still going Yordan Alvarez for the purposes of, I know the Astros, as we just laid out, are less likely to be, at the top of the standings at the end of the season, which might hurt his case. I still cannot believe that this guy has somehow found a way to be better than he already was, that he has one of the lowest strikeout rates in baseball, that he is lifting the ball more. He was already essentially a perfect hitter, and now he's even better. And I'm so impressed with that. And I continue to just marvel at his at-bats. And I think if he stays in the lineup every day, which he has so far this season, which is also impressive and important, he's going to have one of the best offensive seasons across the board that we've seen in quite some time. Obviously, Judge has done that as well. But I think he's more likely than your pick to be up there with Judge with an OPS and a slash line that we have not seen in quite some time than Ben Rice. So I'm going to give Yordan a love here for now.
One of my favorite Yordan Alvarez things too is that, like, he has been unlucky if you look at the expected stats, right? Like, he's been on a surface level from a production standpoint one of the best hitters in the world, yes. And he's been also very unlucky. Whereas Ben Rice is a little bit different, and that's why if we're talking about it over the long run, if you ask me, Jake, who do you think will be the MVP at the end of the year in the AL, I think I would say Judge. I think you would probably still say Judge. Is that fair?
Yeah.
Okay. But that's not what we're talking about. we're talking about Ben Rice. Ben Rice is who I would pick if it ended today. I don't love picking first baseman generally, and maybe that's not fair, but like he is just the offensive numbers are better than everybody else's offensive numbers, and it's not really that close. He's the only guy with a WRC plus that starts with a 2. Like the slugging starts with a 7. 759 slug. Dear Lord. What a thing.
Yeah.
And I talked about this in the past too, how like Aaron Judge has had a sidekick every year and how that sidekick constantly changes. And Ben Rice, based on how he's played, has a chance to be Judge's best non-Soto sidekick. And that is something that intrigues me a great deal.
Before we go to NL, just some names that have popped up. Trout, of course, being back in the mix is so much fun. I think the season Shea Langeliers is having is certainly worth mentioning, as far as now that we want to appreciate catchers who hit a bunch of home runs. I think Shea Langeliers deserves to be in that mix. He's also just had the best offensive season that he's had. And then I love that Bobby Witt Jr. is still near the top of the WAR leaderboard despite having 3 home runs, because his defense and base running has been that good that he is... His floor is unbelievable. His fight, we are seeing it right now, that this dude can barely have any home runs and still be one of the best players in baseball. And guess what? I don't think he's going to finish with 3 home runs. I think he's going to still finish with a pretty high total there, which means it would not surprise me whatsoever if he is still a finalist by the end of the season. However, I do think that the National League field is more compelling and maybe a deeper group in some respects. So let's go to NL MVP. And let's talk about the chances of someone dethroning Ohtani. So as we talked about earlier, Ohtani is probably still the right pick if he has a Cy Young season or close to a Cy Young season and his OPS is merely 850 or whatever. I don't know where that balance would have to flip, how bad he would have to be offensively for that to change. If you do think about it from the perspective of, well, he's only pitching so often, so... When he's this good as a hitter, he's able to, when he's at the version he's been at as a hitter the last few years, he's impacted the game at the team every day and blah, blah, blah. I still think he's the answer objectively, and I don't want to divert from that. But what Matt Olson is doing right now is just astounding. He has another huge home run last night against Andrés Muñoz to give the Braves a late lead. He, of course, more recently has been known for his Iron Man streak, playing in over 800 games in a row and counting, but he looks as good as ever. And the Braves are the best team in baseball. So Matt Olson is going to have a lot of, you know, backers on his side, even with a lot of other players on the Braves doing well. Do you agree or believe that Olson is the clear next one? Because there are some other infielders who are more well-rounded that are absolutely going to be in the mix as well here.
Yeah, I think Olson, if it ends today, is the guy. The two that have really impressed me are Nico Hoerner of the Cubs and Bryce Trang of the Brewers, 2 second basemen in the NL Central, who just have taken leaps that I think will stick. I think they're meaningfully better players than they were in the past. I think they've gone from, oh, he's a really nice player that the league doesn't, fans don't give enough credit to like, oh, they could finish third for an MVP. I think that as far as Ohtani's concerned, it's difficult to see him not winning. I think he has to be considered the overwhelming favorite. You have to count in some sort of offensive bounce back. But even if he wins the Cy Young and is a league average hitter, I would vote for him for MVP. Almost certainly.
I am in agreement with you on that. The last thing I'll say about these other NL candidates, I adore Nico Hoerner. I think he is awesome, and I'm glad that he's now getting this attention. However, I think Terang and Ellie have clearly way higher ceilings than Hoerner at this point. The offensive leap that Terang has made over the last year is astonishing. He is crushing the ball. He is hitting for power. He is still playing tremendous defense. Nico Hoerner is a great player and a great hitter. The power is just not going to be there, even though it's relatively up to where it's been. And I think Ellie, I know he had a brutal error to end last night's game and he's striking out a bunch. He looks awesome, and he is still playing a great shortstop. Yeah. So I still would expect right now Terang and Ellie to finish ahead of Hoerner by the end of the season, but all 3 of those guys have been fantastic. All right, let's go to Cy Young. Talk about the AL Cy Young, and this is maybe the most interesting award of all of these because the top three from last season are now all on the injured list. That's Tarek Skubal, as we discussed at length earlier. That is Hunter Brown, who we mentioned in passing. It is also Garrett Crochet, who is not expected to be out for much longer with his shoulder inflammation. However, shoulder inflammation, don't love that, as we mentioned. Shoulder, don't love that. And also, he just hasn't really been that good so far this season. So he wasn't pitching like he was in the mix anyway, which opens the door for a few other pitchers to kind of fill the void here, including, most notably, the guy who finished fourth last season and someone who has come close to a Cy Young in the past, and that is Yankees lefty Max Fried, who has been terrific. He is not going to be at the top of the strikeout leaderboard like most modern aces, but he's about as reliable of a starting pitcher from a run prevention standpoint as we've had this generation.
He's done the shtick for long enough where it's like, no one's sitting here worried like, oh no, can Max Fried get outs with a K per nine under eight? Like, yeah.
He can, folks. He definitely can.
Yes.
So if he gets the 200 innings, which he's on pace to do, which would be a career high, and no one's really doing that anymore, he is going to have a good shot. However, it's 2026, and what do we like here in 2026? We like the big guys that throw really hard and strike people out and are on pitching ninja. And that's Cam Schlittler, his teammate, who has been unbelievable and is throwing outrageously hard and now has, a tiny ERA. And I think what is most impressive about Schlittler so far is just the strikes that he's throwing. He's not walking guys. He's throwing this. Normally, there's some amount of trade-off when you are throwing this hard in terms of command and control. He's also very interesting because he's basically just throwing three fastballs, four-seam sinker and cutter. Now, to call the cutter... I mean, it is technically a fastball. The movement slidery, on the cutter still screams slider. That said, it is unusual. He doesn't really throw another breaking ball. He doesn't throw a changeup at all. But man, oh man, this guy has looked incredible. And he, I think, would be my pick right now. But I don't know about you.
Has to be. He has the seventh lowest walk rate in the sport among qualified starters.
Ridiculous.
That's nuts.
Ridiculous.
That's nuts because
it's kind of like, it's like the version of Yordan.
It's like Yordan. Yeah. Because like last year, Cam Schlittler, even when he was going really well after coming up with the Yankees as a rookie, I never got the sense that he really knew where the ball was going. Like the stuff was so good where he could get whiffs in the zone. And it is a great, it was a great example of the difference between control and command where like he was walking guys, but like, he was throwing it in the box, but he wasn't always throwing it where he needed it to go in the box. And this year he's doing that more often. And it's just a reminder that this is a relatively slow burn. He's a lot taller pitcher who's new to his velocity, cold weather guy. Like there are a lot of factors here that have always pointed towards there being more in the tank. I just thought that we've reached the peak last year. I didn't think there was another level. And yet here we are. Seeing the best version of Cam Schlittler. Go ahead.
I mean, I sort of agree with you, but also he just got there. It's not like to say that his peak was this brief rookie season and one postseason star also feels kind of silly. So, but I agree with you. This was not how I expected him to improve this quickly and be throwing even harder. He was his last outing. He was throwing even harder than he was at the start of the year. So he's been amazing. The one other guy I just want to mention, the AL Cy Young before we go to the NL, is Dylan Cease. Because what is so interesting about him is that in some respects, it's Dylan Cease. He's striking out guys. He's walking guys. He's not going as deep into games as you would hope. But there's also some things that are a little bit different with him. He's throwing a changeup now somewhat consistently more that he never has figured that out before. And he's getting a ridiculous amount of ground balls. That has never been a part of Dylan Cease's game, is keeping the ball on the ground. And he's finding ways to keep the ball on the ground. That could be the key to him pitching deeper into games, getting more weak contact earlier on, and then going to the strikeouts. The command might still limit him, but I do think Cease is different enough now that I do believe that if he can rack up enough innings, he's going to be in the mix here as well if the ERA can come down a little bit. Let's go to the National League where Ohtani, as we've already mentioned, we don't have to talk about him anymore. He's doing everything he can. Paul Skeens has spent the last month digging his way out of the 65 ERA that he had after opening day. And he has done that quite well. I think Paul Skeens, I think I'm still picking him, to be honest, because I still feel better about him racking up more innings than Ohtani over the duration of the season. All of his underlying stuff still looks fantastic. And so, yeah, I just think Skeens is still the best pitcher in the league, and I still like his chances. But Christopher Sanchez looked amazing last night. Yamamoto, the numbers aren't amazing, but, you know, he's still going to be in the mix there. And then Mizorowski, as we mentioned earlier this week, looks the most unhittable of anybody. So I would not pick against Mizorowski because I just don't think the innings are going to be there. But this is a fun field as well.
So that's why, like, if it ended right now, I'm picking Ohtani because the gap in innings between him and the field is not that significant because we've just had fewer innings to pitch, right? But over the course of the long haul, I'll probably pick against Ohtani. I will say he's working deep. Like, he's only pitching once a week and he's going to have fewer starts, but he's, I believe, got 6 innings at least in every start and went 7 last night.
Yeah.
So on an innings per start basis, he is moving like someone that deserves a Cy Young. Nolan McClain, I think, is another name that deserves recognition. Jordan, please. Thank you. Ohtani. Like, is Ohtani going to do it? Go ahead.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm just thinking about on the ESPN basketball podcast, The Hoop Collective. They always make fun of Brian Windhorst for, quote unquote, discovering Victor Wembanyama. And I think we're now at the point where Jake, every time he mentioned Nolan McClain, he's like, it was me. I found him. I was the first person to see Nolan McClain and said, he's going to be good, folks. Every time Jake is like, it was me. I did it. Where would he be without me? That's what it makes me
think. He'd be nowhere. I called the Orioles to draft him. By the way, all-time.
As a hitter.
All-time whiff. The Orioles drafting Nolan McClain and failing to sign him out of college. Oh, terrible. The one guy that has impressed me the most is Mizorowski. We're like, we're seeing the ceiling. Can he do it over, you know, 30 starts? Can he do it on a rainy Tuesday in Stoke? Let's see. But on a rate basis, it's been incredible. AL Rookie of the Year. I'm going Munetaka Murakami. I think that you could totally reasonably go Kevin McGonigal. If you pick McGonigal, I think, how do I put this? Picking McGonigal is like eating a fancy meal or listening to highbrow music. And I think picking Murakami is like a Baconator or, you know, why don't you just meet me in the middle or like party in the USA? Where it's like, it says more about you than it does about the player. I think you could reasonably pick either of those guys, but I'll take the home runs.
They've both been awesome. Chase DeLauder and Parker Messick have also both been amazing for Cleveland. But this is going to be a really fun one to watch because of the contrast. Oh, I totally agree with
you. So different.
It really
McGonigal's
is.
But like,
McGonigal, man, he's already their best player.
Yeah.
And by the way, I think Scooble getting hurt now is terrible news. Great news for, like, hey guys, Kevin McGonigal might just carry this team anyway because he gets to play every day. Yeah. He's going to be playing shortstop and he's going to be batting leadoff. So anyway, I'll go McGonigal.
Would you like to see this well-rounded, demure, sophisticated, mature baseball profile? Or would you like to see Munetaka Murakami rip ding-dongs over the fence and swing out of his ass? I'll take the latter.
I'll watch both. NL rookie. We know Jake's going with Nolan McClain. That has been made very clear.
I'll go Nolan
McClain.
That's a
totally reasonable pick. I know Sal Stewart is kind of going through it right now. I still think he's going to have some really impressive numbers for a rookie hitter by the end of this season. And he's impressed me so much. That dude just rakes. And he's been set on this goal to win Rookie of the Year for, it sounds like, a while now. So I don't want to discount him. Also, should probably have mentioned Chase Burns in the NL Cy Young race too, if he can throw enough innings. But Sal Stewart is awesome. So I'll go with the hitter over the pitcher. But we know Jake's taking Nolan McClain.
Yeah, I think the other two reasonable ones are JJ Weatherholt and Moises Ballesteros. Two guys in the NL. Two guys that have been swinging really good in the NL Central. And then he's not in the mix right now. Carson Bench was awful for 3 weeks. He's figuring it out. That has flipped.
Yeah.
it was only a matter of time. Benj is like on the beginning of a heater. Keep an eye on that. I think in a month's time, 2 months' time, he could be in the mix for this.
And that is a great place to finish, because I did want to make this point. We are, you know, we're saying, oh my God, these are the awards. Surely these will be the winners at the end of the season. It is still quite early. And a good way to think about this, on this day last year, Nick Kurtz had yet to hit his first home run of the season. He was up, but he didn't hit his first home run until May 13th. And he did just fine winning Rookie of the Year. So there's a long way to go for all of these awards. But we will see how bad these takes look at the end of the season, let alone a month from now. But you can go read the full review of the current awards races over at Yahoo Sports this week. We did it. Thank you all for listening to this episode of Baseball Barbiecast. Thank you to Carter Singh and Ingrid Rosas for producing. We will be back on Friday with another podcast, because that's what we do. Bye.